Welcome to the Fairhaven Church Sermons Podcast. Fairhaven is a part of Harbor Churches, a multi-site church located in West Michigan, and we exist to help people find their way back to God. We hope this message helps you to take your next step in your faith journey. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, everyone. If you are back, maybe for the first time, came and joined us on Christmas Eve and you're back just a few days later, welcome. We are so glad that you're here. And we have a desire for you. I have a desire for you. And it would be this, that you don't just be in another face in the crowd. We want to be a church where people get connected and build some friendships and do life with one another. We recognize that many of us, we do church in rows, so that we sit in rows with each other and look at the back of other people's heads. But we don't do life that way. We do life in circles and with love. If you're looking for a place to belong and a place to get connected, I think you came to the right place, and we would love to help you get connected and have your story become part of the greater story that is God's people all across the world. This is just one of those gatherings of those people across the world. This morning, we're gonna be wrapping up our series, which we actually wrapped up, but I found something so good, like we can't wrap up yet, and so this is an addition to the Ruth series, but we're going to be wrapping up our series in the Book of Ruth, A Christmas Origin Story. And what I want to start with is this, that every great story has certain elements to it. And all of us love a really, really, really good story. Doesn't matter if we're younger or older, we love stories. And great stories have these five things that are a part of it. It has characters, some of the main characters of the story. It'll have a context, and like a Western is in the West, and a futuristic movie would be set in the future. It has a context. It has some kind of conflict that comes into the story that needs to be resolved, and the resolution happens at the climax of the story, and then there's the closure to it that people live happily ever after, or however the thing closes. And for us, between these two, between the conflict and the climax, is sort of the high point of the story. It's where the tension gets lived out. And it's like, how is this thing going to be resolved? And this is real. And if there's too much tension in the midst of the resolution, some of us are like, okay, it's too much. I'm tapping out. And if there's not enough tension in the story, that's called a Hallmark story, right? Because we all know how it's going to end. Like, those two don't know how, but eventually they will fall in love, and that's what happens, and we'll tap out of that too. But a really good story has the right amount, and the tension between the conflict and the climax keeps us on the edge of our seats. And then there are those stories that actually go past that. That we're waiting for the resolution of this thing, and we kind of have an idea of how it's going to resolve. But there are those stories that you're like, wait a minute. The resolution of this thing was way, way bigger than I had expected. And I think, maybe not you, but I think one of those movies or one of those stories is a movie from 1994 called Shawshank Redemption. And if you haven't watched it, you should. And if you haven't watched it, I don't think I need to do a spoiler alert for a 1994 movie, but I'm about ready to wreck it for you, because I'm going to tell you how it goes. So there's two main characters. If you look at the characters, two main characters. The first one is a guy named Andy. So this is a picture of Andy Dufresne. And there's a great scene, by the way. He's blasting music through the whole courtyard out there and locked the door, and he's just enjoying the music. But Andy gets wrongly convicted and sent to prison. And there's a moment in the movie where the warden, this guy, the warden actually knows he's innocent, But because Andy's really good with figures and he's been doing all of his book work and actually doing dirty work behind the scene for him and running figures, kind of laundering money through the system, and he's forcing Andy to do it, that he's not going to let Andy go. He's going to keep him in prison for his life. And at that moment, we are all rooting for Andy. Eventually, Andy is going to get out. We don't know how he's going to get out of there. We know his plan. We can see it unfold. He's going to escape. Don't exactly know when or how or where it's going to happen, but we see it happen. And then the plot twist at the end is like, wait a minute, this is bigger than we thought. So a 500-yard crawl during a storm through a sewer system, and eventually Andy pops out in a drainage ditch, leaving the authorities just mouth open stunned. He escaped. But then, for the first time, it's revealed, and like, whoever wrote this, this is brilliant. It's revealed that behind the scenes in the movie, it's the first time we see it, Andy was actually siphoning money off this scheme that the warden had going and set himself up so that he could survive on the outside and also was looking at a way to expose the warden and kept meticulous records and gave them to the police. And so we see at the end, this guy messed with the wrong guy. The warden messed with Andy, and Andy had this guy cooked at that point in the movie. And you're like mind blown at the end of this, that Andy was doing more behind the scenes than you could actually see. Same, actually way more, with the Book of Ruth. There is way more going on at the end of this story than you could have predicted. Ruth, a Christmas origin story, and today, if we haven't caught it already, my hope is that by the time we're done, that we will catch why we would actually call this a Christmas origin story. If you want to open up to Ruth chapter 4, we're going to be, and I'll pull the words up, but it's good to have your finger in this one. Ruth chapter 4, and we're going to be at the very end of the chapter, and we're going to read what at first glance is going to look really boring, and my hope is that by the time we're done, you will go, wow. Wow, what God was up to in this story is absolutely amazing. So Ruth chapter 4, the very end of it, we see these words. All it is a lineage at the end of it. Almost like, why did they place this there at the very end of it? But it reads like this, that Perez was the father of Hezron, Hezron the father of Ram, Ram the father of Amminadab, Amminadab the father of Nahshon, Nahshon the father of Salmon, Salmon, the father of Boaz, Boaz, the father of Obed, Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of David. So this story has all the elements of a great story, and I'm going to just fly through it. So if you're catching up today for the first time, I don't want you lost and say, great, I showed up to read a lineage for a Sunday morning. The great story here is this. The characters in the Book of Ruth, four chapters long, are basically Naomi, and it's Ruth and Boaz. Naomi was widowed during a 10-year period, lost both of her sons. Ruth lost her husband. And then there's a relative. His name is Boaz. There's your characters. The context of the story of Ruth, it's in the days of the judges. It's dark days in the land of Israel. They have no king, and what they have is everybody is doing what is right in their own mind. What is right really is not being done, but what is wrong is being embraced. That's the land that they're in. And there's a severe famine in the land, which makes matters worse. It is a people who are aimless in a land that is lacking. And then we have the conflict. And the conflict is Ruth and Naomi are left without any means to make any means, to get provision, to be provided for. And they are left, if you will, without any hope. So much so that Naomi speaks of her own life, my life has become bitter. Just call me Mara. Call me bitter. And then we have the climax. How is this going to be resolved? How will they find, they who are hopeless, how are they going to find hope? And what we have is this man Boaz steps in. And he has heart. He's a man of God. He looks after Ruth and he looks at Naomi and realizes these two are in great need. I will do something about it. And the climax of the story actually finds itself at a gate where the city entrance is, where all commerce is done, and where legal proceedings happen. There's a bench, and on it, as we discovered just a few weeks ago, are sitting the judges of the land because they're invited for a legal proceeding, and there is a potential that should be next in line to actually do something about the plight of Ruth and Naomi, and then Boaz, who's second in line. And the one that is in line first to actually say, I will provide for Naomi, I will provide for Ruth, I will provide where they can't provide, bring hope where they can't bring hope, redeem they who cannot redeem themselves. That guy took his sandal off, weird, and handed it to Boaz as if to say, I can't step into this and do anything about it. I don't have what it takes to redeem them. You step into it. And Boaz put the sandal on and said, I'll do it. Resolved. It's resolved. And he redeems Ruth and Naomi all at once. I will provide for you. Boaz, who then became the father of Obed. He and Ruth had a son. Obed became the father of Jesse, and Jesse the father of David. So Boaz had a son who had a son who had a son. That's how it ends. That's how the story ends. But so interesting is this. If you were here on week one, we didn't actually start in the book of Ruth. We started in the book of Matthew. Because Matthew starts where Ruth ends. And we're talking somewhere around 300-400 year difference in the writing of these stories. Hundreds of years later, Matthew actually copy and pastes from the book of Ruth into the beginning where Ruth ends, he starts, and it reads like this. Prez, if you have your finger in the book of Ruth, you could follow around along, even though we're reading from the New Testament now. Prez, the father of Hezron, Hezron, the father of Ram, Ram, the father of Minadab, Minadab, the father of Nashan, Nashan, the father of Salmon, identical, word for word. Not one change in this. Like, what's going on here? Why is he copy and pasting from the book of Ruth if it's not a Christmas origin story, which it is? And then the book of Matthew continues with a couple additions saying this. Salmon, the father of Boaz, that's where Ruth ends, doesn't say the next, whose mother was Rahab. That never gets mentioned in the book of Ruth. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of King David. We just have three additions here. We have King being added to David, a qualifier that this wasn't just David that was born, this was King David. And it's down the road, looking back, that David that was the son of Jesse, who was the son of Obed, who was the son of Boaz, became king of Israel. In a time, the context of the story, no kings, everybody doing what's right in their own mind. But a king came in and brought order to the nation. And then Obed's mother was Ruth, and Boaz's mother was Rahab, why did he write these into the story? And who are they? Well, to be certain, the reason he wrote them into the story is because they matter to the story a lot. And when we look at the story, Rahab and Ruth are females, of course. But females were not included in the lineage. They weren't written in during that day. And yet, and I love this about Matthew, Matthew pushes the envelope forward and saying, I'll write them in. Inspired by the Holy Spirit, I will write them in. And the only time that women would have been written into genealogies or a lineage, the only time they would have been written in is if they were matriarchs. And Rahab wasn't a matriarch, nor was Ruth. Neither was a matriarch. In fact, they were foreigners. Rahab, she was a Canaanite. Ruth, she was a Moabite. We haven't said much about that, but in the reading of the story, it felt like, and it's over-exaggeration, but it kind of felt like we have mentioned Ruth enough times and keep banging it. Every time we read her name, it's Ruth the Moabite or Ruth the Moabitess. It's just Ruth, Ruth something, always additional to her name, is this word Moabite, a Moabitess, almost like we've heard it 100 times, again and again and again. Her name always being mentioned with that. And Rahab was a Canaanite. She's a Moabite. And the Canaanites and the Moabites were hated. Hated by the Jewish community. They were the outsiders. And as we read through the lineage of this story, what we find is that Boaz had a mom. And her name matters. And her story matters. Obed is linked to Ruth, and then this King David, and where Matthew eventually takes the story, we'll play with this in a second, is there's a bunch of names from King David that find their way all the way to the end of the lineage in chapter 1 saying these words. And Jacob, the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, and Mary was the mother of Jesus who was called the Messiah. Wild. I mean, this is actually, it's a wow. It's a wow ending to the story of Ruth, that this guy named Boaz, good heart, godly man, decides I'll redeem Ruth, and they have a son whose name is Obed, and then eventually Matthew picks it up and just writes the exact same thing, puts a qualifier in there, and what he qualifies in his, you can see it in this next slide here. He qualifies that Salmon was the father of Boaz. And I want you to know, this is where Matthew's saying what Ruth doesn't. I want you to know whose mom he had. And it was Rahab. Why is that important to Matthew? And then all the way through, it goes to David and then eventually to Jesus. But why is it so important that we know from Matthew who Boaz's mother is? I think it's this, at least in part, it's this. Because it explains Boaz's actions extremely well. Boaz grew up with a front row seat to a mother who was Canaanite, who was an outsider. He had a front row seat to what it felt like to be marginalized, a front row seat to what it felt like to not quite fit in, to be in need. He had a front row seat to experiencing life in that position. And he had a heart for that, because a lot of times for those of us who have experienced something, we have really strong feels around that. When we've experienced a loss, maybe of a mom or dad or child, when somebody else goes through the loss of a mother or a father or a child, we feel it differently. When we've gone without food, we feel differently about those who go without, when we've been without the ability to maintain whatever that is in terms of finances, when somebody's struggling, we feel it differently. Boaz had some feels around this stuff, but not just that, but he also watched his mother at a time exercise her faith as a Canaanite in the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, when at one point she had a decision to make. The spies of the army of the living God of Yahweh, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, were in her community and needed a place to hide. And at the risk of her own life and at the risk of her family, she brought those soldiers into her own home and hid them. And it was given to her, accredited to her, as having faith, trusting God in that moment. He had a front row seat to that. It makes all the sense in the world. Easy prediction. The problem in the story of Ruth, the conflict is this. Those two, Naomi and Ruth, they need some help. It makes sense that a guy like Boaz would go, been there, experienced that, watched it, front row seat with my mom, an outsider, Canaanite, and Moabite. I will do something about that. I will step in and make a difference there. That makes all the sense in the world. But then to have this written in, not just to that story, but to see in the book of Ruth that it goes from Obed, God gave us a son, and we lived happily ever after. No, there's more to the story than just that. Because Obed had a son whose name was Jesse, who had a son whose name was David. Zero chance that Boaz was in a place going, this son, this isn't just about the redemption of Ruth. This isn't just about the redemption of Naomi. This isn't just about the redemption of a family name. But Matthew picks it up and puts King to David and says, King David, this is about the redemption of a nation. A nation would be redeemed. That David would rise to the status of the greatest king considered in those days that Israel had ever seen, and restored the nation of Israel. And Matthew's like, hold on, because I'm not even close to done. And he goes through a laundry list until he gets to, and Jacob had a son whose name is Joseph, who was married to Mary, who had a son whose name is Jesus. That this isn't just about, we could predict Boaz, of course. You had the character. We know your mom. And it makes sense that you would do that work. But what we couldn't predict and what he couldn't predict and what no way Ruth could predict as she held Obed is that one day, not just the redeemed, or redemption of a nation, redemption of humankind would come through this family lineage. That makes me think about us, and it makes me think about God. And at the end of 2025 here, this is our last Sunday, I want us to grab these three things. And the first one is this, to remember again that God's ways are higher than ours, that his ways are just way beyond our thoughts. The book of Isaiah, it reads this way, Isaiah chapter 55, as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. Actually, I'm going to read a little bit more of it. We got all kinds of time, and the Bible's worth reading, right? This is listen to what the prophet wrote, recording what he heard from God. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are my ways your ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than yours, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. As the rain and the snow come down from heaven and do not return to it without watering the earth and making it bud and flourish so that it yields seed for the sower and bread for the eater, so my words, what God speaks into existence, that goes out from my mouth, it will not return to me empty. In other words, when I say yes, it's a yes. It happens. When I say no, it's a no. It will not happen. But it will accomplish what I desire and achieve the purpose for which I sent it. God spoke into existence everything that is, including a man named Boaz and a woman named Ruth and a woman named Rahab, who had an impact, and her son, who had a front row seat, and the DNA of Rahab got into him so that he enacted what he could see in the moment that he was in. Couldn't see all that, but he could see this. He could see back that God was faithful, and he could see, I'm going to step in. I'll put the sandal on and step into my portion of what God is doing right here and now. I will be faithful in it. And God said, and my thoughts are larger than yours. What I can see is way beyond what you can see. You can see the moment, Boaz, and thank you for being faithful in it. But I've got something way more planned, which is to say, number two, that we can't always see what God's larger plan is. We can't always see it. In fact, I would say we're just incapable of that. Sometimes God will give us a glimpse into a bit of the future, but wonder with me, just wonder with me, if hundreds of years later, Boaz being faithful to step in and say, I will redeem as the Redeemer chooses me to redeem. I'll be God's man. I'll follow the example of my mom, and I'll just do what's right in my generation. And to think that hundreds of years later, this is Boaz, and it was Rahab, and it was Ruth. These are just people. They're just people. And we could say not just people, they were Canaanite, they were Moabite. They were those people. And God had something so big planned, couldn't possibly see because it was too far ahead. It makes me wonder about you and me. Just people, and you're like, yeah, but they're in the Bible. They weren't until they were. Until God did something with their lives, just their faithful acts in the moment. I just wonder what story is being written that we can't see. And what are simple acts of obedience, faithfulness in the moment could ripple effect into way down the road? Because what if Boaz hadn't? I don't know. But what if he hadn't? Wouldn't be this story. God still would have redeemed the world. It would have been through a different lineage, I guess. I don't know. But I do know that that act of faithfulness for you and I can result in something we just cannot see, because that's the story. And the last thing that I would invite us to think about is this, that we actually can exercise our faith in the assurance of things hoped for and a conviction of things not yet seen. That we can know something about God in this story, because that's what's being told to us. Something about God, that his ways, they're just higher, that his vision, so much larger, that his working, pulling a thread through the tapestry of life, generation after generation after generation of your family lineage, you're in it. and how he can pull that through hundreds of years from now. Maybe nobody else will connect the dots but heaven itself. Don't know the story to that, but I do know that we can believe this is who God is and exercise the same faith that Rahab had in her moment, that Boaz had in his moment, that Ruth had in her moment. Each one of those different details, same faith, the assurance of things hoped for, and a conviction that I have no idea how this will eventually turn out. I just know that God is God and his ways are huge, and I'm gonna step into my small part of that. For the last few days here of 2025, for all the days of 2026, and for the rest of my life, to be faithful to he who is bigger and more than I could ever imagine. It's what Paul said. What no eye has seen, what no ear has yet heard, what no tongue has yet confessed, he is prepared to do for those who trust according to his word. Father, thank you for this Christmas origin story. Clearly, it's an origin story. It got copied and pasted into the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Redeemer of this entire world. To see a man who walked in the shadow of his mother, who stepped in to redeem a family, and to watch you go, watch this. I'm gonna redeem a nation through this family. And then watch you, the great Redeemer, and say, through this family, the redemption of all humankind. For the Canaanites and the Moabites, the Gentiles, even those that aren't a part of the Jewish family. That's most of us, maybe all of us in this room here today. We bless you and we honor you. And may you so use this story in our lives that we would look into those simple places where we can simply exercise our conviction that you are that. And believe that that which is unseen, it matters how we order our steps here and now today. And live out our faith, faithfulness in the situations that you put before us, the people that you've given to us to live faithfully with, for this church family, that we can do this together on mission together. We bless you and we honor you. And may you, Holy Spirit, who blows like a wind wherever you so choose, stir our hearts and stir our minds, that we might truly, truly, truly honor you in the simple things in life. And we pray this in your name. Amen.
Thanks for listening. Our hope is that you are encouraged and that God revealed a piece of his character to you through this message. For service times or for more information about how you can be a part of Fairhaven, you can visit us at fhchurch.org. Have a great week.